This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
Very good. Brian Gosch, Majority Leader in the House. We're in our third to last week. We made it through crossover day. Got done about 7:30 last night, about 3 hours behind the Senate, I think. We went through 247 bills in the House, and they're now either dead or passed over to the Senate. Some have already been signed by the governor, and we have a lengthy calendar again today. I don't know how many of those bills that we will take up today. We'll probably take up four or five Senate bills in the House floor besides consent and the concurrent resolutions that are on the calendar, and we'll keep making progress with 2 weeks out. Still got the education package out there. Medicaid expansion is still kind of somewhat looming over the process, and who knows what will happen there. I know the governor has expressed some frustration over the lag in time that CMS has provided information to him and his staff over what exactly they'll do. On a positive note, they have committed to some telemedicine, which should improve delivery of care to Native Americans in South Dakota and create some efficiencies there and then some savings to the state of South Dakota, which is very encouraging. I know he's very positive about that as well. On the House side, there was a lot of discussion from the House Republicans to have a separate policy discussion on Medicaid expansion. And yesterday on the House floor, the House passed House Bill 1234, which would require that in the future, if the governor were to decide to want to expand Medicaid, he would seek permission through the legislature in a separate appropriations bill other than the general appropriations bill for the same. So you could have a separate policy discussion on expansion separate from all the things that are tied into the general bill, all the different funding aspects of state government and the departments and Medicaid providers and courts and all the things like that.
Gary Kamak, President Pro Tem of the Senate, and we did get through crossover day yesterday, and I'd like to say that I've been in the on the floor different times where you see the clock strike midnight, and I think both houses were very efficient in getting through the work that needed to be done. I think we finished up about 4:45, and the House wasn't that far back, so the process has gone fairly well this year. We worked through all of the bills from each house and got them passed on to the other chamber, and I think things have gone really well that way. We've got a lot of heavy lifting yet to do this session. We've already dealt with a couple of the administrative side of the education bill, and we've passed that over to the House, and there's a lot of things to be considered over the upcoming couple of weeks.
You know, I'd like to follow up with that just from the standpoint that we had both Senate Bill 131 and Senate Bill 133 in the Senate, and essentially those are the two policy pieces to the governor's education proposal. Senate Bill 131 is the bill that really changes the formula and looks at this per teacher allocation that sets up the sliding scale. That passed with strong support. The second piece, which sometimes doesn't necessarily get the headlines, but I actually think when you want to talk about teacher shortages, there are a lot of critical pieces in Senate Bill 133. That bill looks at really expanding the e-learning center up at Northern to be able to provide telecourses to students across the state. One of the other things it looks at, too, is creating incentives for districts that are able to find areas where they might be able to share a teacher if they were unable to procure one on their own. When you go back and take a look at the recommendations out of the Blue Ribbon Task Force, obviously teacher pay was one component of that, but there were 28 separate recommendations that occurred there to really take a comprehensive look at this, and I think Senate Bill 133 is a great example of some of those other pieces that, you know, maybe aren't getting the headlines, but at the end of the day, all help to try to fix that process. Another great example in 133 is the fact that we're going to allow reciprocity finally. So if we have teachers that had a praxis and a license up in North Dakota, they're not going to be required to do the same thing to become a teacher down here in South Dakota. What I think is kind of interesting about some of those ideas is that they really kind of mirror what's occurred in the healthcare industry over the last decade or so. You've really seen a move towards telehealth, as the leader had indicated, and now hopefully IHS is taking a look at that. And what you've seen the legislature do over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years is really take a look at licensure in the healthcare world to try to find ways to make that, to streamline that, to make that smoother. And so it kind of makes sense to some degree that we would do those same things in the education field.
Well, and I'll just echo the remarks from the others as well. And we look forward to getting 131 and 133 over on our side of the chamber, because that's the meat of the education reforms. You know, we dealt on our side, we dealt with the funding piece of it, and sent that 1182, sent that over to the Senate, and they're in the midst of deciding whether or not that's the way to go. But I'm excited as well about a lot of the features of 133, and I expect a good examination of that, good discussion of that, as well as 131, As the leader mentioned, we did pass the Medicaid expansion, or the process bill that dealt with that would separate any significant expenditures out from the ordinary ongoing discussion of our budget. We also handled some other things this week that kind of are under the radar that I think are good things for the state. One is a midwife bill. We passed a midwife bill out of our chamber, and that's been a movement been promoted for a number of years, and of course midwives have been around for hundreds of years, more than that really, and in our state, with the rural nature of our state, it just makes sense to have additional trained people to be able to assist with the birth of children, because you can't always get to a hospital. And so it's a good alternative, and it's an option for people to pursue if they want to. And so we're happy to send that to the Senate for consideration. Another bill that we passed out of our chamber the other day dealt with the recognition of dyslexia as a learning disability. And we think, much like autism was a couple years ago, that's something that merits further discussion, further examination, and that we are able to formally pursue some treatment and some approaches in assisting kids with dyslexia. So what you'll now see is a more of a focus on the budget process. We passed our revenue expectations, and now the appropriators are working on deciding what to spend. We actually have a legislative budget, which is a little different than the governor's budget. That's a new thing, or relatively new, and we have a new process in place, and we're starting to see that play out. And so you'll see the focus kind of turn to that a little bit as well in the coming 2 weeks.
I think we'd probably open it up for questions now if there were any.
Jennifer Jones, South Dakota Public Broadcasting. So House Bill 1182 is expected to be before the Senate next week. What's that discussion going to look like in the Senate? Will there be easy support, a close vote? What do you expect?
Well, I think anytime that you talk about a tax increase, that's certainly not going to be an easy discussion. That bill is currently, as we speak, up before our Appropriations Committee in the Senate, and I would expect to see that on the floor next week. Clearly, like any major funding bill, there's probably lots of negotiation that has to occur yet. But we'll kind of see how things play out here over the weekend, and hopefully we're able to find a way to actually take care of and fund those pieces that we talked about on the policy end to be able to affect some of those changes.
Are you hearing about any amendments that might be proposed, any changes that might be made? Can you tell me anything about that at this moment?
You know, I think certainly I would always expect that there probably be some folks that would have some ideas. I think, you know, now that the House has kind of coalesced around an idea, clearly that probably becomes the first topic, because any changes that you make to that, you're kind of would have to go back and try and regain support. But certainly senators are talking about different proposals. And, you know, the first thing we want to do is clearly to go through the budget, just like the House did in their discussions, to make sure that, you know, if there were areas that, you know, we could make cuts to or find ways to reprioritize that, that would obviously be our that would probably be the preference of most folks. And so, you know, given some of the difficulty the House had doing that and actually identifying, you know, sustainable areas, I you know, it's probably unlikely that we're going to have a lot of ways to do that in the Senate. But I think anyone is, you know, I think all of us are open to that if we're able to find a sustainable way forward.
So might you be taking up a plan similar to Representative Gosch's alternative proposal?
I don't have anything specific yet. I mean, obviously, we'll continue talking throughout the weekend, but I don't have anything that everyone has coalesced around yet.
I would like to add that there's no idea that's off the table. Everything is going to be considered prior to the time that we take a vote on any direction that we want to move. So we don't want to, this is a big decision for the legislature and for the state of South Dakota, and we don't want to leave any stone unturned and make sure that we're moving in the right direction.
Do we have any questions from callers on the phone lines?
Sounds like everybody's fatigued after the session and crossover, so it's been pretty quiet around the Capitol today so far. Walking through the halls, you just don't see the activity and hear the activity like we've seen earlier this week. Even
earlier in the week, it was shoulder to shoulder when you get up around the committee meetings, and so it's if you were looking for a parking spot, you better figure on getting that's part of the wellness program. You just walk for a long ways to get to the Capitol.
And as when the House passed 1182 over to the Senate, it seemed like 30 lobbyists followed the bill over there. So we have a little bit more breathing space now.
I was wondering if you could comment a little more on House Bill 1234. Explain why do you believe it's important to have the separate bill when people can go have that discussion in appropriations already? Why do you want that separate discussion?
Well, from the House perspective, one of the things we do with our whip groups, and we separate everybody out, allows them to talk a little bit more freely, is there was probably 95% interest by those members of the House to have a separate policy discussion. And so then, as the leader of that group, I thought it was important to carry forward that desire in the form of a bill that would allow for that in the future if we get to that point. And as it looks more bleak this year, and that could change in a heartbeat, of course, but indications that we've had so far would be that the governor will not announce that he wants to go forward with Medicaid expansion. Then in the future, and of course, if the Senate would pass the bill, and I don't know if they would pass the bill, but if they would, then you would have that separate policy discussion separate from the general bill. There was just a lot of overwhelming support on the House side from my members that they wanted a separate discussion of the bill. They wanted to be able to vote for a general bill to fund state government to make sure there was no hiccup in that process, but then at the same time have a separate policy discussion on Medicaid expansion separately.
And I'd like to comment. I had an opportunity to have some conversations with some healthcare professionals this week, and the folks from Avera were in town, and I know that there's already, because of the discussion that we've had, I know there's already some significant changes starting to occur in IHS, Indian Health Services, and some ideas that are moving forward that'll make a big difference for those folks. So just by bringing a spotlight onto this situation has already brought about some positive changes.
Is wanting to have this separate policy discussion, is that an indication that expansion is not supported, or is that not a conclusion that one should draw?
It's not a conclusion you should draw. I'll put it that way. The people that, both individuals that supported expansion as well as folks that opposed it, like the idea of having the separate policy discussion. And I do also want to just take a moment to recognize Senator Brown's efforts in this initiation of this and a recognition of the IHS issues, and so some of these reforms that have come about dealing with e-health, telehealth, and the problems with the IHS inability or their issues with their service levels and the quality of health care are largely, in a large part, were brought to our attention by Senator Brown. And so the reforms are happening. I think we can give him some credit for that, and I just want to thank him publicly for that.
Well, I appreciate the comments, Representative Hager. There have been a number of folks that have been making efforts, and you know, even to that end, I think we certainly appreciate the level that our congressional delegation has become involved too, because I think that has really helped to push this issue forward a lot faster than it maybe would have occurred otherwise.
Are there any other questions? Okay. Well,
thanks. Thank you.